Good afternoon and welcome to our virtual meeting. It's 1:30 p.m. on April 20th, 2021, and time to reconvene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. In accordance with Governor's Proclamation 20-28.15, we are holding meetings remotely. Online with us today, we have Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, our Vice President, Commissioner Tony Olson, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Sean Aronow, our Acting General Counsel, Melissa Collins, our Commission Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, our Assistant Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, and Lila Wall, our Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off the camera on your device when not speaking. I will ask for questions or comments on agenda items as each item is discussed. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Some questions can be answered during the meeting, while others may require more time. Please indicate you would like to speak by clicking raise hand in the software, or if joining by phone, dial *9, and I'll call on you to speak at the appropriate time. Are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda, commissioners? Okay, I'm not hearing any.
Mr. Wolf, you're on mute.
This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, state and spell your name and indicate where you're from. Comments from the public is item 2 on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So first up, we have our general manager brief. We have a continuation of our morning briefing.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Logan. Next up on the general manager briefing will be our Connect Up meter deployment and Mark Fleury. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, John. Good afternoon, commissioners.
Good afternoon.
Okay, I've got control of the screen. So great. My name is Mark Fleury. I'm the former Connect Up program director, and now I'm a senior manager in D&E, and I'm here this afternoon with Allison Jubb, the district's human resource director. And we're excited to provide you with an overview and update on our strategy around meter exchanges. Now, as you know, and as we have discussed previously, we'll be exchanging our entire fleet of approximately 360,000 electric and 22,000 water meters as an integral part of the Connect Up program. Now, the meter exchanges are planned for a 24-month period spanning all of 2023 and 2024. And the activity involves interaction on multiple levels with our entire customer base. So it's an extremely important exercise. I'm just trying to advance the slide here, but bear with me, please. Okay, so our agenda for today will include a discussion of how we change tack to this current exchange approach, the benefits to the approach. We'll talk about community partnership opportunities and DEI as it pertains to this new team. Talk about risks and mitigation. We've also reached out to some reference utilities and we can share the results of those conversations with you. And then we'll talk at a high level about logistics, how we're gonna make it happen. And then finally, some next steps. So how we got here, you know, since the inception of the Connect Up program in its current form, we've pursued a key objective, which is to maintain open lines of communication with the IBEW. And this channel of communication has been fostered throughout each phase of the project. So examples would include regular meetings to update the meter reading team during the program planning phase. Other examples would include engaging key impacted stakeholders from the IBEW and the vendor selection, from selection criteria development to vendor interviews, then ultimately the selection of the best fit solution, which we've just reported out to you on here as recently as March. Now, looking forward to the next phases, our implementation and deployment phases, the program team will collaborate with the IBEW on the installation of the communication network and the meter exchanges. After a detailed analysis over the course of the last 3 to 4 months, we've shifted our strategy from one of contracting the residential meter exchange of labor with a third party to a strategy of utilizing internal labor to support this effort. Now, please bear in mind, as a reminder, we've always intended for the more complex commercial industrial meter exchanges to be conducted by our meter shop, and that remains unchanged with this new approach. So now I'll move on into a discussion of the direct project benefits. And really, the benefits from this approach can be broken down into four separate categories: direct project benefits, cultural benefits, workforce planning, and community benefits. And I'll let Allison speak to the latter three, and I'll just speak directly to the direct project benefits here. So diving into the direct project benefits, we first need to understand what the approach is. We're proposing to utilize temporary, time-limited staff to create a new work group or team adjacent to the meter shop in the organization chart. Now, this team is going to be responsible for the entirety of the residential meter exchanges. There is an allowance for temporary time-limited staff, and it's already been created through the CBA. This is an at-will status. So with this approach, the time-limited staff becomes a trained workforce pool, which will be available to complete the work and also to compete for internal vacancies as our installation labor needs to climb toward the end of the deployment in 2024. With the creation of this new pool, we'd have three flexible labor pools for installation or for meter reading, as noted here on the slide. We would have the current meter reading team of approximately 38 with their primary duty of reading meters, but with the option for them to help with the installation. And going forward, as we get close to deployment of our new meters, any new meter reading staff would be hired on as time limited because there'd be a sunset on their employment. Now, these new employees would support the current meter reading team, and their primary duty would be reading meters, but again, also with the option to install. And then thirdly, we will have this new time limited meter installer team whose focus would be the residential meter exchanges, but they would also be cross-trained to read meters if we had a need develop due to any number of reasons, to include staffing shortages or inclement weather or even pandemics, as we noted from this last year. Now, as I just mentioned, during deployment of the new meters, meter reading needs will gradually reduce. You know, we expect that as we conduct exchanges by route, we will reduce the need for meter reading by approximately one FTE every 2 weeks. As this occurs, our regular meter reading workforce will be ready to transition to new designated roles here at the district. And these three labor pools will provide us with the flexibility to ensure that both meter reads and meter installations are maintained at the levels needed for the business. One additional benefit that adds to the flexibility inherent with this approach is that due to the fact that the labor pool includes skilled labor from the IBEW, there may be an opportunity to support the meter shop installation and their responsibilities during deployment, which will include all of their normal support duties in addition to all of the commercial and industrial meters. So moving on this next slide into additional direct project benefits, we will control the installation schedule. It's a huge benefit to staff. Additionally, the district is fully responsible for communication channels. This will include calls into the call center, customer interaction in the field, which we expect on a regular basis. The district would have full control and ownership of safety training and be in a position to institute some very strong safety protocols. For me, you know, here, the bottom line is that the district will own the end-to-end customer experience with our own eyes and ears in the field. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Allison to discuss the additional benefits.
All right. Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. Allison Jeb, I'm the Human Resource Director here at Snohomish PUD. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. Mark is really focused in on the project benefits, which are real and concrete and will really help with the logistics as the installation proceeds. But I'm going to focus a little bit more on the less tangible benefits and tying this to our strategic anchors, to our cultural focus for increasing diversity in our workforce, really workforce planning itself, and then how this benefits our community. So, you know, oftentimes I think people first go to, if you're going to be an employer of choice, you've got to focus on pay and benefits. Well, that is important. But more important than that, and a significant piece of why people choose to stay with an employer, is, are they getting development opportunities? Do they have projects and things that they can be excited about participating in? And are they able to rally around key initiatives? And our work up to this point in Connect Up has been a collaborative approach. As Mark said, we included the IBEW members, employees from all different departments have been part of it. And we're really sensing that growing excitement that this is happening. We want to take that excitement, continue to build on that excitement, and take it all the way through to the deployment stage and not hand this off to a vendor. So there is that pride of ownership. And I don't want to gloss over that because it is so important to really being that employer that people want to work for. It's also more than just the employer who people want to work for. It's also that passion that people bring to our organization for not just serving our community, but being part of our community. And the idea of using internal labor here really does give us a unique opportunity to build some partnerships and relationships with existing community organizations that are out there that focus on and specialize in workforce development and really develop a deep partnership with them, utilizing their clients. No reinventing of the wheel is needed, but we can take their clientele and actually put them to work in our project so that they can get their foot in the door here at the PUD. But for us, it helps us not just in the project, but our workforce pipeline, our talent pipeline, even beyond the project in the next 5-10 years, because we will have forged those relationships. And I'll spend a little bit more time talking about that. But just keep in mind that the tangible benefits of this approach are big. The intangible benefits, in my view, are going to be even bigger, even stronger. And we'll talk about that as I go through this. So just kind of focusing a little bit more on what we're looking at in terms of challenges in the coming years. We are not unique. A lot of employers are talking all across many industries, including our own energy sector, that we have a number of retirements that are coming. We are concerned about having the right skill sets in our workforce. We have fewer people coming up through the ranks and not enough people to fill the talent that we have coming in our own workforce. In the next 10 years, of the people currently working today, 35% of them are likely to be retired. That includes myself, 10-year window for retirement. And it, just to kind of wrap your head around that, the average person works here for 25 years. 10 years window with 35% of the people leaving, that's almost 10,000 years of service. That's a lot of knowledge walking out the window. And we have a window of time with this installation approach to do something now to prepare our pipeline for not just this project, but going forward. So the other area of the future retirement projections is really to hone in on some of the biggest at-risk areas. And that is a lot of our, distribution and engineering groups, the water group, generation, there are higher levels of retirements that are coming in those groups. And those groups are the skilled trades. Those are the ones where people are coming up through a pipeline, such as what this could offer doing installs, a time-limited pipeline that could potentially fill these future needs that are coming out in the next 5-10 years. So that's one area that we really want to focus on is how do we develop that pipeline for people? But there's also another aspect. And as you know, John has talked about, one of the big focuses for the PUD right now is how do we expand the diversity of our workforce to better reflect the community that we serve? And it's no secret. We are short on females represented in this organization and people of color. This project and utilizing internal talent actually offers an opportunity for us to double down on our community partners and really help them bring in their clientele into our workforce with these time-limited positions. And their clientele are extremely diverse. So the fact of partnering with them is going to increase the diversity of our pipeline. And not only through this project, but then the people that we hire out of this project for long-term positions, naturally, we're going to be expanding the diversity in our workforce. So that is of very high importance to us to better reflect the communities that we serve. And, you know, the other aspect of this I don't want to gloss over is employees need to know that there's development opportunities. And this project, a project of this size and scope, offers real leadership development opportunities. And Mark will go through a sample org chart to show some of what those are. Opportunities to be part of a big project with big implications and high involvement with customers. Those opportunities don't come around every day. And we don't want to miss the opportunity to double down on our workforce to give this great opportunity to our employees to develop leadership and develop other skills so that they're prepared and excited about those future promotional opportunities inside our workforce. And then the last part is really this flexibility as we transition meter readers. You know, imagine for a moment, you are one of, 35 to 40 meter readers who work for the PUD right now today, and you're hearing that your job is going away. And if you didn't plan on retiring in the next 5 years, what you're gonna be looking at is there a home for me here? So having this internal workforce with these three flexible labor pools will allow us to move meter readers into their new home, their new position with the PUD, in a timing that is both flexible to the district and the deployment schedule, but also works for that meter reader. They're gonna be applying for jobs internally. I would rather have them go take that new job internally at the PUD and let a time-limited employee stay on a little bit longer in the deployment. So all around, we're getting a lot of flexibility out of this project. So knowing that we have those opportunities, it's really now to focus on what are those specific partnerships, and Mark and I have spent a lot of time talking through what's out there. I just wanna say that the partnerships that are available for us in the community are not new. And so just a shout out to some of the groups that we have who are already really connected in our community. So, Brenda White and Kim Johnson's group, there are folks in Customer and Energy Services, there are folks in at the CorpCom group, Laura Zurich, you heard from today. These are people that have already made inroads into our community and are connecting with these workforce development organizations. We want to leverage that and build on their relationships and expand them even more. And on areas where there aren't relationships, let's start them. This is the time. This window of time will help us. So first, just to a shout out and connect with the IBEW here. Unfortunately, the business rep that represents Local 77, Nicole Reedy, was not able to be here today. She was planning on it and then got called away at the last minute. Nicole is the senior assistant business manager with Local 77, and her network, including Local 77, as well as the other IBEW locals, between all of that, they feel very confident that they will have not only enough workforce available to fill our needs, but also they're looking forward to partnering with these community agencies, because it's been a focus for Nicole to expand the diversity in the IBEW as well. So they want to partner as well in this diversity and equity and inclusion initiative. But in addition to the IBEW, we have done some outreach already just to kind of test the waters, not getting out ahead of any actions by the commission, but just to understand what is out there. So we've talked with folks from Snow Isle Tech. They are ready with graduating seniors who have 1 to 2 years of trades training who could step into these time-limited positions and then for us, hopefully migrate into regular jobs. We've met with Hope Works. Also very excited, a very diverse person, clientele. They are a local workforce, and they also have the potential through some of the workforce development monies that they have to potentially help offset some of the costs of training, such as our safety and the electrical training needed for installers, as well as bringing in an additional augmented workforce at no cost to the PUD. This would be funded through their own grants. Who need some experience. They need job experience. So this is a great opportunity to partner and get some folks in our community that we serve to work on a project. You've met Julie Mainstone at the last meeting, and she presented on the RAP program, the Regional Apprenticeship Program out of Marysville Pilchuck High School. Again, another program. We don't have to invent this stuff. It's already in place, where they do a great job of putting students through 1 to 2 years of pre-apprenticeship, skilled labor skills. And those will be fantastic opportunities to be hiring those students right out of high school to come into these time-limited jobs and then become hopefully part of a workforce that could then migrate into other positions that we need going forward. In addition to those, we have other areas. I just wanted to touch on and give a shout out to the ANU program. That is a program in our region that's focused on trying to break down some of the gender-based barriers in the construction and trades. So they focus on helping women get into pre-apprenticeships and other people who are underrepresented, other populations that are not represented well. We have done some outreach to the tribal communities, the veterans community. We already employ veterans and have good outreach with them. In fact, some of our fantastic employees that I know have presented here in front of the commission, Kevin Johnson and others, are veterans, and we want to continue to build that relationship. They would be excellent employees to come in to time-limited positions, get their foot in the door, and then eventually migrate into other positions as they become open in the district. And of course, we have a great community college system here, Everett Community College, Edmonds Community College. They offer opportunities for us to help with the training for the installers, potentially even with some cost offsetting. They have the ability to partner with us on the content. So we make sure that we have our safety protocol and our electrical training that we want to have in that install team. So that's a great opportunity for us as well for a partnership. And then lastly, I mentioned that there's already so much work that happens by our PUD team. And we have a couple of great high school, teachers that focus on the K through 12 area. They've already built great networks with high school students and high school teachers and counselors. We can partner with them to be taking the high school seniors as they're graduating and trying to get them into this pipeline, this talent pipeline, so that they then potentially have a great opportunity for a career after the project here at the PUD. So we really, again, just want to double down on our community, on the resources that are out there, and really try to use this as an opportunity to build that infrastructure that's the scaffolding that's necessary for a long-term talent strategy, but also utilize their current clientele to help augment our staff with time limited. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of the discussions that we've had around, well, what are the risks? What are the downsides to using this type of a program, bringing in labor and doing a time limited staff program to install the meters versus a meter installation vendor. Of course, one question is, well, what if the IBEW can't find enough labor to fill the team needs that we have? Really, in actuality, it's not a huge amount of labor that's needed. In fact, I almost think we might be wishing we had more space, more positions based on what's out there. So if we just went with the IBEW alone to provide referrals, I think we would have no problem filling them. But I do want to emphasize that the IBEW is excited about partnering with these agencies and really finding a way to expand their own diversity. So they want to be outreaching to these different types of organizations. So outside of the IBEW, the other area that we would be looking at is, what about turnover? I mean, let's face it, a lot of people go into temporary jobs, not because they only want to work temporary, they're trying to get the door. So we've thought of different things about how can we mitigate that risk. And really that turnover risk is twofold. One is people come in the door, they get their foot in the door as a temporary or time limited worker. And then as quickly as something comes open, they bounce out and go to a different job. So there's just this constant churn, meter readers. There's a lot of churn in that group. So we're trying to find stability for that workforce during the deployment. So what we've talked about is potentially engaging with the IBEW to have a time-limited employee for this project only, needing to stay in the project until we're ready to release them. So don't be coming in for 2 months and off you go to another position. stay with the project. And then towards the end of when we no longer need you because of that deployment schedule, then you have the opportunity to go into other positions. The other idea that we have, and you know, a lot of times you think of meter installation vendors as providing a financial incentive to their workers. If we really build on the psychology of why would somebody want to come work here as a temporary to get their foot in the door, why not build on that? Why not take, instead of giving them a financial incentive, say to install a certain number of meters in a day or meet safety expectations, what if they could earn their way to job shadowing? What if they could, you know, for every X number that they achieve, maybe they earn 2 hours of job shadowing in a line apprenticeship or other places in the district? We can build on the fact that what they want to do is network. They want to show that they're great workers so that we could draw on them. Why not double down on that? Why not build that pool and that network internally? So those are just some ideas that we have. We're not highly concerned that we would have a lot of turnover in those teams if we build the structure around it. And Mark, do you want to talk about some of the remaining areas that we've discussed?
Yeah, I'll take over here, Allison. Sorry, I'm trying to navigate the slides. So thanks. I'd like to just continue the discussion here of our risk and mitigation analysis, which did include looking at estimated costs associated with this new approach. And really, first and foremost, due to the fact that the meter exchanges are just an exercise in deploying a large team of skilled laborers, we look closely at productivity implications. So meter exchange productivity is an important element when it comes to productivity. TMPUD has a very strong performance history when it comes to productivity. Whether we're looking at storm restoration or major capital projects, we've got a great track record. So this fact, coupled with the project management team's proven ability to monitor and manage logistics, suggests that we can be every bit as productive or more so as an outside vendor who would also be training and hiring local labor. Our new time-limited employees are at-will employees, and if performance concerns arise, they'll be managed through effective performance management, just as we do with our staff. We've also explored the option of the incentive plan or the job shadowing that Allison mentioned on the previous slide. Lastly, we looked at the wages of installers contrasting the general market with PD wages intended for time-limited status hires, and the wages are generally comparable or more favorable for the PUD time-limited status. Benefits were also a consideration, but most base benefits are required by law across the board. So now I want to just briefly discuss the reference utility that we spoke to. We spoke to several utilities, but probably the best example was SoCalGas. They're just a really large scale success story. It was a great resource for us to gather lessons learned. They are a subsidiary of Sempra Energy, which provides natural gas service to about 22 million customers in the SoCal area with a service territory of 20,000 square miles. And prior to their AMI journey, which began in 2013, they employed over 1,000 meter readers, the majority of whom, about 700, would be retiring during the deployment period, which was about 6 years in length, about three times the length of ours. Now, they approached the problem with a similar approach as to what we're proposing. They had a strong interest in controlling the schedule. They had interest in controlling the customer experience and the deployment. So their proposed approach included retraining meter readers so that they could employ their own existing workforce for their gas meter exchanges. And to establish a framework for the approach, they drafted letters of agreement with their local union, which included the creation of new labor classifications. They created a meter installer class and then an office support specialist, which handled all their scheduling and customer contact. And then they also included a bonus program to incentivize exchange rates. Their staff monitored key metrics and worked with the meter installation team to ensure productivity objectives were met and that they were on target. And the SoCalGas staff were very generous with their time with us, and they were very willing to discuss with us their deployment, which was highly successful. And our key takeaways were, it's really important to retain flexibility in the workforce, which, as you've heard today, is really a key component of our approach. And additionally, one of the primary keys to their success was just very close collaboration with the union throughout the life of the project. So now I've got a couple of slides with which we'll convey our thoughts around the logistics of this approach. We've performed some preliminary planning in large part to inform a cost analysis, but also as a part of our due diligence just to fully understand the impacts of the strategy. So with respect to the meter installation, we're still proposing to hire a meter installation vendor, albeit with a much reduced scope of work. The selected vendor would not provide labor for meter exchanges, but rather services to include overall meter deployment expertise. They would provide a work order management system along with handheld devices if we need them. And the work order management system that's provided by these vendors are really tailor-made to facilitate and record these meter exchanges. And they're tailor-made to interface with SAP to ensure that the transaction's recorded. The MIV would also be asked to develop an overall deployment plan that would meet our proposed schedule, and we would use that to inform our required staffing levels. So we really feel like it would be important to still have the experts on board, but in a much diminished role, really just in a support and services role. We've also looked at an organizational chart that would support the meter deployment. The primary project accountability would lie with a deployment manager, which you can see at the top center there. And that individual would interact with the IBEW and would also interface with a dedicated HR generalist who would work in filling and maintaining staffing in these positions, as well as spearheading the meter reader transitions into their new positions within the district. Now, this deployment manager would also be the center point for the meter installation vendor to create and update the deployment schedule. The warehouse manager, as you see here, will oversee the satellite warehouse facility, the dedicated call center team, and the installation manager, whose team would conduct the meter exchanges, the residential meter exchanges, as shown here on the left side of the org chart. Now, the meter installation team is represented below the installer manager and would consist of a lead and installer structure. We're expecting the need for 35 to 40 installers, and so approximately three leads and a manager would flesh out that team. I think it's really important to note, and Allison's already spoken to this, that there's really multiple positions on this org chart that will provide great leadership development opportunities for our employees. So really moving on with logistics, the next item we had to analyze for the project was a warehouse facility. You know, we determined after working with the warehouse staff that there really is insufficient area at the operations center to support the meter exchanges. What we need is a daily muster location for approximately the 35 to 40 installers with parking for their personally owned vehicles and then the district fleet vehicles. We need secure warehousing area for approximately 40,000 meters at any given time. And so we looked at the 75th Business Center as an opportunity. The site could receive occupancy permits from the City of Everett in short order and already has the benefits of close proximity to ops for meter testing and staff access. It's got fencing, it has cameras and badge security access already installed. There would be some limited improvements that would be required to obtain occupancy as indicated here on this slide. And those annual operating costs are the current annual operating costs. And we don't expect much of a change there if we do utilize the facility. Now with 75th, we have two options that are being considered. These include the use of just a smaller warehouse building that's higher up on the hill. And as a second option, the additional inclusion of a portion of the main building in its warehouse as well. So that would add approximately 2,000 square feet if you use that building as well. Looking at comparable space on the market, we've estimated the cost at approximately $400,000 for the two-year deployment period. Now, this estimate excludes any required tenant improvements, such as the security cameras and badged access that are already available at the 75th Business Center. As we move forward and consider the use of the 75th Business Center, it's noteworthy that it may be beneficial financially to the district just to hold on to 75th until the end of the deployment and not surplus the building due to its current state. The market is really flush with commercial space right now with the amount of telecommuting that we're seeing. Now may not be the best time to surplus the office and warehouse space. So it may actually be to the district's benefit to hold on to it until 2025. Nevertheless, as we move forward, you know, the scope of the use of the 75th Business Center will ultimately include considerations of safety, cost, schedule, and our business processes and operations efficiency. The next element with respect to logistics was vehicles. In order to provide fleet vehicles for the meter deployment team, we would purchase approximately 40 vehicles, and vans would likely be the best option for meter exchanges. These vehicles would be used to transport meters, equipment, and tools, and would be modified to look like our standard fleet vehicles, complete with district logos. The vehicles would be fueled and maintained by our PUD transportation team, and eventually would be surplused at the end of deployment, or they could be incorporated in the existing fleet if the need was there. Call center. You know, we've determined project support from a call center is a really key consideration for this approach. Some of those duties would have otherwise been taken on by the meter installation vendor. And so with this approach, we've identified the need for dedicated call center support for ConnectUp. And it would facilitate the following types of customer contact that are listed here. So it would include information requests, which are just calls from customers wanting to know about the program. Opt-out calls from customers wanting to opt out of the new meter technology. Could also be a customer calling to request an appointment. They may want to schedule a meter exchange at the customer's preferred date and time. We could also get claims that came in from customers. They could be identifying that maybe some property damage might have occurred during the meter exchange process. And then lastly, an outbound call to schedule an appointment. This would be a call generated from the call center to a customer, whether it was just assumed that an appointment was necessary because there was an RV parked in front of the meter, or that the first installation attempt failed and an appointment must be made for the second attempt. So those are all duties that would fall on this dedicated call center team. So I hope this presentation has answered some of your questions around the meter deployment strategy and our current plans. Our proposed next steps would include scheduling a date for a closed session to talk about the conceptual framework for any future letters of agreement that we might structure with the IBEW. We would also propose to go ahead and move forward and begin the process to obtain occupancy permits for the 75th Business Center building or buildings, and then retrofit that space to accommodate the meter storage. We'd also continue planning out the org chart and timing of those hires that I shared with you. Also would begin engaging in planning with the community workforce development partners that Allison identified. We would also need to start developing training programs for our installer team and scripts for the call center personnel as well, in concert with the IBEW. We would develop meter deployment business processes, and that work's already scheduled for third and fourth quarter of this year, which is our blueprinting phase prior to implementation. And then lastly, we need to go ahead and get the meter installation vendor RFP advertised and out on the street, of course, with that much reduce the scope of work, and the goal would be to have vendor under contract so they can participate at the tail end of blueprinting and get the work order management system integrated with SAP as a part of that exercise. So that concludes our presentation today, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions, commissioners?
First of all, I think that there's a lot of good thinking, a lot of good work that's gone into this. I really applaud the presentation. I am curious, when I look at the org chart, my question has to do with people who are already employed at the PUD. Are they going to have equal opportunities to move over from wherever they are, perhaps into one of these new positions?
You want to take that, Mark? Or
I'll let you take that one, Allison.
Sure. So some of this is to be determined, right? It depends on the positions. I think we start with just the mindset of these are development opportunities. So to whatever extent we can, we're really hoping to put PUD employees into these elevated positions so that they've got a great opportunity to learn. It is possible when we look at the meter readers, at the end of this project, there's going to be 6 to 8-ish meter readers that are still needed. They might be prime candidates to hop right over and become installers. That could be a really great project for them because now they're part of the eyes and the ears on the ground of the installation as it works. So we would be open to that as well. We aren't limiting the internal folks from applying for positions in this work.
Okay, I think that's important because, you know, you really have to respect all the time, the years, and all the work that current employees have already put into it. And if they're not close to retirement, I think it's really important to say, you know, what do we have for them as well as all the, I think the ideas for recruitment are outstanding. I'm really happy to see young people who will have job opportunities going forward. And it's really great. I just kind of want to protect people who are already employed.
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, Commissioner Wolf, I just want to make sure I answered the question fully. And that is those meter readers, the regular full-time meter readers that we have, we will be working with them unless they intend on leaving or retiring. We're working with them very closely to identify opportunities within the PUD. So that'll be part of our conversation on strategy with conversations with the IBW, but we're really looking to how can we find a home for them that is a meaningful new career for them here at the PUD? That would be our goal.
Right, because there might be other jobs that come along relating to this program or this mm-hmm. project that are not just meter readers, but you exactly. know, some other opportunities in the mm-hmm. call center or whatever. I mean, you never know exactly what else you're going to need. You've got it pretty well nailed down, but, you know, there might be some new opportunities. And I just want to make sure that, you know, as I said, repeating myself, just that the people who are already there have the same kinds of opportunities as people coming in from the outside. But I'm a union supporter in general. And I'm glad that you're able to work with the IBEW successfully.
Commissioner Olson, do you have any questions?
Not at this time. I will share that I reviewed the briefing, had some issues, need for clarification. I've heard the presentation today. It didn't get there for me. I'm not prepared yet. I've got to take all this information in, but I will share with you up front that I do have some questions and I need clarification on in certain areas. I'll do my own studying here and to see if I can clarify, if I can answer it myself. I'm not sure I can, but I do have questions about this proposal. Well, it's not a proposal, it's part of your planning, but I've got some serious questions on it at this point.
I do have another question about the 40 vehicles. And I understand that you think vans would be most appropriate. And so I'm kind of half serious here, but I'm hoping they'll all be EVs, right?
We've certainly discussed that, Commissioner Wolf. You know, one of the limitations in our ability there would, of course, be charging stations.
Yeah,
so
I know.
To the extent that we could support that, we would absolutely do that. And we've had a lot of discussion about that for sure. And Mark okay. Stevens in the transportation department knows the importance of that. So we'll certainly do whatever we can.
Sorry, have you also explored leasing instead of purchasing?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually our first recommendation was to lease the vehicles, but after speaking to finance about it, it's actually in the district's best interest to purchase and surplus. So they spent quite a bit of time analyzing that over the course of the last couple of months and have come to that conclusion.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mark, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a little bit of that analysis on the vehicles was as the project started to wind down, those vehicles could replace older vehicles that we already have on our system. And the transportation department would kind of work out all that, the aging of the vehicles and what needs to go, what needs to be salvaged and so on and so forth.
That was a part of it. I think the biggest mover, John, was just the cost of cash and the rates on leasing versus our ability to finance.
Yeah.
We'll absolutely go through that exercise during the last year of the project, is look at needs in our existing fleet, which vehicles we could hold on to and make use of, and which we'll need to surplus for sure.
Yeah.
I've got a couple questions. The first one, it helped me to understand this better, is how would this process normally work for a utility? if they go out and contract? Is that a local work source that's just trained up just for this one-time installation? I can't imagine there's roving meter installers that move around the country as different utilities install advanced meters.
No, you're absolutely right, Commissioner Logan. It's just not cost effective to bring a labor force into an area and try to set them up and have them support a multiple year installation. So what a meter installation vendor would typically do is have a support team, the deployment managers, similar to what we're proposing, and they would have a warehouse individual and they would look for to lease a warehouse. They would lease vehicles or bring their own vehicles in, and they would have a skeleton team that is a part, a year-long part or an everyday part of the organization. And then they would hire the labor locally, and then they would conduct the meter exchanges and interact at a high level with the utility. And the scope of services that they provide could be as much or as little as you'd prefer. You know, so as an example for SoCalGas, which was the utility that we shared with you that's taking a very similar approach, given the number of vehicles that they needed, they did not purchase or lease their own vehicles. They had their meter installation vendor provide the vehicles and the fueling and the logistics around that. And we're confident at 40 vehicles that we could better support that ourselves. But the meter installation vendors would absolutely use a local labor component and then would provide as many or as few services as the utility requests.
Okay. And then what about the quality of the work getting done? I assume we believe that we can exceed the quality of having an outside contractor doing it. I mean, the experience for the customer, the technical quality. Can you talk about that a little more?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that was a key part of our decision-making process here. It was just our track record with Team PD and PD employees and, you know, their concern and care over the customer and their desire to make that customer experience really stellar is something that we believe that this meter exchange team will bring to the table as well. And that's not to say that a meter installation vendor's local labor wouldn't have a vested interest in the community as well, but we feel that that team engagement and that feeling that you're part of Team PUD will take it to the next level. And so we're really excited about that prospect and think that that's one of the things that we want to control, that end-to-end customer experience. And it doesn't start and stop with the call center. It's really that interaction in the field when somebody comes up to the front door and the customer says, hey, today's not the day. You know, I've got a party or I've got a birthday party in the backyard. I don't want you exchanging my meter. That customer interaction that we'll have better control over is something that we really look favorably on as we look at the strategy.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to have a little more discussion about the costs, the project pricing updates. The year one actual O&M operation and maintenance is double what the estimated was. And so what's the explanation for why that was double?
So Commissioner Wolf, you'll have to give me a little bit more detail about what numbers you're looking at.
Okay, on slide number 14, this is from the previous meeting. I went back and looked at the slides because when I asked about the budget last time, I was told, oh, we already talked about that. So I thought, okay, I better go back and study it further. So, cellular and maintenance components under estimated was 8.9, actual 15.7. Total 20-year cost of ownership was up $2 million. Year one estimated O&M $450,000. Year one actual O&M $986,000. So I was just wondering why we were off so much. I mean,
yeah. So Commissioner Wolf, I think you're referring to our May 23rd presentation, which included an update on procurement. And at that point in time, we had two vendors selected, the first of which was Census. They would be providing the AMI network and also the meters. And we'll be bringing that contract before the commissioners next month with a presentation on, I think it's May 4th or May 5th, and then a resolution for the Census contract on May 18th. So during the initial presentation or at the first session during the month, we can provide more updates on the pricing there. But that information you received was related to that census contract. And then the second element on our May 23rd presentation, which was for the second selected vendor, that was for Siemens Energy IP project and TRC engineers who are providing the managed services component. And so the O&M costs and the capital costs you're referring to are related to those two contracts. Now in the business case for the meter installation component, for which we're here to discuss today, we had approximately $10 million as a placeholder in the business case. With our cost estimating that we've performed over the course of the last 3 to 4 months, we feel with this new approach, we can be within 10% of that original estimate.
Actually, I thought it was the March meeting. I went back and looked at the March meeting. Did you mean March when you said May?
Did I say May 23rd? Yeah, sorry, March 23rd.
March 23rd, yeah. Okay. Okay, well, let's see. So it has to do with the vendors. Primarily the different vendors?
Yeah, so there are ongoing O&M costs not associated with the meter exchange. That's a discrete one-time labor activity. But with the AMI network and meter contract, there's ongoing O&M costs associated with monitoring the network and reporting on events and alarms. And we were proposing with the proposal we shared with you back in March that those services would be provided by the vendor in the cloud, and we would not be doing those on-premise. So that's why there was an increase in those O&M costs over what we had projected in the business case. The other element there was for the meter data management system, which we presented on in March. And that also has ongoing O&M costs associated with software licensing fees and managed services by an IT vendor managing those services in the cloud for us.
Okay, when you're referring to... when you refer to year 14 as the year in which the business case would be positive, starting when? Is that 24 years after 2024?
That's a great question, yeah. And some folks don't realize when the business case actually starts. And so it's the first year post-deployment. So if we finish the meter exchanges in 2024 as we've scheduled, then 2025 will be the first year of the business case. And then it would be 20 years beyond that date.
Okay, so it starts, the first year would start in 2024, and then it would be 14 years after that?
The first year would start in 2025, and then 14 years after that, we would start to have positive benefits that would, you know, impact the net present value such that it's positive. And then the end of the business case analysis period would be 2045.
And that would be the year 2039, is that right? Am I adding right?
Correct.
Okay, and the money for this project is coming mainly out of bonds. We're going into debt to do this for the most part.
Commissioner Wolf, we're revisiting topics we've talked about. I'm wondering if there's a better way to get these questions answered. I wondered if it might be better to email them in.
I don't think so, Commissioner Logan. I want the public to be fully aware of my questions and the answers and this and that. And if everything's done, you know, behind the scenes, I don't think that's fair to the public.
Well, it's not done behind the scenes. These were all topics that were discussed in open public meetings in which the public attended. So the March 23rd meeting, and then there was previous meetings too, talked about all of this. So I guess I'm just concerned that we're straying so far off topic on a day we have such a tight agenda.
I don't think this is off topic, Commissioner Logan. I do not think it's off topic. I think it's very much on topic. And so these are questions that I have, and I think, you know, I'm expecting honest answers, which I'm sure I'm getting. So, you know, I think
Commissioner
I have
Wolf,
a right.
I do have a suggestion. If you have the May 23rd documents in front of you, uh-huh. One of the things you'll notice that is that we provided the commission with a calendar of our activities proposed and interactions over the course of the rest of the year. And you'll note that we're coming back in May to speak specifically about the AMI contract and the MDMS contract. So we can certainly touch on some of those questions at that time. And then also you'll note that we're coming back in, I think it's June or July, to talk about the business case. And so we could do a deep dive at that point in time if that was okay.
Okay, I just don't like for things to go so far before we get on top of the issues. Do you understand my concern about that?
I understand your concern, but this is a project the commission has already approved. It's a big project, so we're talking about it in phases. And so we talked about a big part of it in March. Today, we're just talking about the labor for the installation of the meters. And so I guess I'm concerned that we're going back and revisiting parts that we've already talked about. So that's what I'm trying to understand, how that's helping us.
Well, you know, maybe it's helpful for the public to see how things connect. Because yes, we have the labor concerns, and that was a really interesting, a really good presentation, and I appreciated it, but it does relate to our costs. So I don't know, I will wait until the next presentation and until we have further information. But I know there are a lot of people who are concerned about the costs. And that's just one of the several reasons why they vote, you know, they didn't want me to vote in favor of this project. So, and I abstained, as you recall. And I know that you and Commissioner Logan, I mean, Commissioner Olson voted for it. So now the only option I have, the only alternative I have is to try to be responsible about, you know, how things are done from now on out, as long as I'm here.
Oh, and so I understand that, and I completely agree with that role. But I'm just saying we just had that conversation. We went through the updated estimates of cost. Some things were higher and some things were lower. I'm trying to understand why we're revisiting those same items again. They haven't changed. This is a new item. And it sounds like the answer in this is the estimate is it'll be within 10% of what the original estimate was.
Thank you for your comments.
Commissioner Logan, I just wanted to reinforce my need for additional clarification on certain things does relate to today's presentation. So I'm hoping that the board is fine with me continuing to pursue clarification on those points. I have questions.
I support your continuing to study it for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's part of our due diligence until we approve something. So,
thank you. We all look at it from different perspectives, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't hearing that. Because we have approved this project, but it is in chunks, and I just need a better understanding of this chunk.
Okay.
I won't belabor it. That's it.
any other questions, Commissioner? All right. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Allison.
Great. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. So next up, we have item two, comments from the public. First of all, I'll say normally we have this right after our meeting starts, but we knew that we are going to have a lot on our study session today. So we scheduled the study session to continue on into the afternoon. So are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please state your first and last name for the record. We have a couple of hands up. First, I'll call on Gayla Shoemake. Good afternoon, Gayla. You are on. Can you unmute yourself?
Good afternoon, commissioners. First of all, thanks to Mark and Allison for their presentation. I was very interested in it, and I think that it's important to have continuing updates as they gave today. However, I recommend that they clarify the changes to the overall budget and in a simplified manner, Commissioner Logan, so I can understand it. What was the original? How does what they're doing now affect the overall budget? And as you know, I am one of those people who is exceedingly interested in the cost overruns, even though reports have been that it would be quite well done. Some of the places that I researched did not have such good responses. So if we could be kept informed as we go along when there are changes, here's the budget, here's the changes, so we can see that. And that would have to be simplified so I could really understand it. Second thing is I like the idea of the talent pipeline, but on in contrast to what Commissioner Wolf was concerned about, the PUD staff, if the TUD staff take all those positions, then the new people, the women and people of color, will be the last hired and then possibly the first let go. So there's going to have to be a nice balance between the two if we're be able to get any of the equity issues addressed that we are looking at as far as the PUD is concerned. And a third thing, when Mark talked about the risks and mitigation, he talked about performance and wages and so forth, but he didn't talk about possible hazards. And I would say radiation hazards and possible litigation. Those were not on the list. And along with that, I live in an apartment. So I found out that our electric meters and the new meters are going to be directly below me. I'm in the first floor and they're in the basement. And I'm concerned about where the heck that radiation is going to go. Is that going to come up through the floor to me? Because that's where the electric meters are. So those are my three concerns. And the last thing is, anyone who would like to have some Earth Day action, give me a call, 425-418-7673. We're going to be doing a banner and posters celebrating Earth Day, which is this coming Thursday. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gail. Next, we have James Robert Deal. Mr. Deal, you can unmute yourself. Mr. Deal, are you there? Mr. Deal, I show you unmuted. Allison, are you seeing something different than what I'm seeing?
He is showing unmuted.
The only thing I notice different is usually he also calls in on a telephone number, and I'm not seeing that.
There is a number, but I don't know if that's his or not. If you're using a telephone to talk, Mr. Deal, hit *9, please, and then I can call on you.
Maybe he didn't get the memo that it was going to be after the presentation. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to have to move on. Mr. Deal, if you can hear me, I encourage you to email in your question to us or visit us next time.
He has his hand up.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anything. Okay. Next is item 3, our consent agenda. A, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of April 6, 2021. B, bid awards, professional service contracts, and amendments. C, consideration of certification slash ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval, but I have a question on discussion.
Okay, well, let me ask for comments from the public first.
Okay.
Are there any questions or comments from the public about the consent agenda? If so, raise your hand, please. Okay, I'm not seeing any. Are there any questions or comments from the youth commissioners?
My question relates to governance process number 5 under in our policies, commission policies. Number 7 on page 4 of our policies has to do with documentation of decisions. B says board minutes will contain the discussion and rationale leading to board decisions. And most of the, this is not a criticism of our clerks, but it's a question as to why we're not following the policy, because it just talks about what the final decision was. If people wanted to look back and see, well, what were the issues? What was discussed? What was the rationale? It's not there. And we cannot depend on our electronic devices, you know, the recordings. So I would like for us to get serious about including the discussion, not every word, but the essence of the discussion and the rationales that lead to our board decisions.
Okay. I think that's an excellent topic when we have our workshop to talk about our board policies. So.
Well, we're supposed to be governing ourselves. As Ann Spangler reminded me, we govern ourselves. And so I am saying right now that we are not following the rule of procedure relating to documentation of decisions. And I don't think we want to wait until whenever we can have a board discussion, although they are due no later than July. We're supposed to be looking at our policies again by July 2021. But I don't know why we're not following our board policy on this.
I actually don't know why that's the way the board policy reads. I've never seen minutes from an elected board that has all that kind of detail in it. Normally board minutes just record the actions that a board takes.
Well, so. I've been in a lot of organizations that do talk about the essence of the discussion and what the issues were and what was the rationale that led to the board decision. And I think it's important, you know, since we're a small board, excuse me, and one of us has a bad voice. I just think it's really important, you know, if we're going to try to follow our policies, to pay attention to this one, because the public has a right to know what were the issues and why did they vote that way.
If I might interject, this is Sean Arano, Assistant General Counsel, acting on behalf of the General Counsel. We do have the recordings, which memorialize the discussions that have occurred in the entire proceeding. And that is tremendously helpful for historical reference to the actions that the board does take. But I think you raise a very interesting question that would certainly benefit from discussion by the commissioners. When you address your governance policies and procedures.
Okay, so we'll put it on the agenda for July, I hope. Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments on the consent agenda, commissioners?
It's not a question. I just want to comment, commissioners, to bring your attention to the Walker Hill Reservoir Award. We're not only awarding, but we also are authorizing one of the bidders to withdraw their bid. That's just a formality. It's a formality for the record.
Yeah. Okay. With no other questions or comments, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
I'm going to abstain from because of the minutes issue that I've raised.
Okay. I vote aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion carried. Item 4, items for individual consideration. 4A, consideration of a resolution authorizing the Assistant General Manager Distribution and Engineering Services of Public Utility District No. 1 of Snohomish County to execute a master license agreement with Puget Sound Energy Incorporated, establishing terms and conditions regarding the licensing of wireless communication facilities on district property. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. We have Mo Matthews here available to answer any questions, commissioners, regarding the resolution. We, of course, had a presentation this morning about this measure. First, I'll ask if there's any comments from the public regarding the resolution. Mr. Deal has his hand up. I'll call on you, Mr. Deal.
He's muted.
Yes. Mr. Deal, are you there?
He doesn't apparently know how to unmute.
I hear a sound, a distant sound, Allison. Do you think that's Mr. Deal?
I do, but I'm not sure how he's coming through when he shows on mute. His telephone number, I still see not on there, the one he usually calls in, so I'm really not sure.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Deal, if you're talking, we're unable to hear you. Very sorry. Okay. We'll move on. Next is, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor? I'm sorry, I'm confused now. I confused myself. Are there any questions or comments from the commissioners? Sorry.
I have none.
I have none.
Okay. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next, item 5, our CEO General Manager Report. You have a report for us today, John?
I do have some good things to share. First off, Energy Star announced that for the second straight year, we received the award for excellence for promotional efforts in expanding our energy efficiency outreach. Several different programs were highlighted for this award, but among them were our energy saving bundles for residential and small business customers that resulted in millions in energy savings for customers during a very challenging year. And you can read more of the specifics of all the promotions, including in the award, in our press release. And as you know, this is an award made possible because of the great teamwork of the Team PUD, and also a huge thank you to our CorpCom as a partner in all of these promotions, as well as our external partner, C+C. And Pam has made the commitment that they're going for a three-peat next year. The details around the programs highlighted this year are reduced overall energy needs by more than 53 million kilowatt hours, which is actually savings of approximately $5 million to our customers. Provided more than 4,000 energy kits consisting mainly of LEDs to welcome customers to the new customers to the PUD income qualified discount program. And then offered three distinct bundles of energy efficient products to local businesses highly impacted by the pandemic, including commercial kitchens, retail establishments, and office spaces. Our business customers claimed 822 bundles for a savings of almost 2 million in kilowatt hours. The updated Energy Star clothes washer offer to $50 smart reward and simplified qualifications, making the process easier and more appealing for sales associates to promote. We sold more than 250 Energy Star certified heat pump water heaters during a 5-week limited time offer that surpassed our previous year promotion by 412%. And lastly, conducted a spring smart rewards sweepstakes to draw customers to the PUD smart rewards website, which features our Energy Star products. And that resulted in more than 3,800 customer entries and an increase of 135% over our 2019. On the community support front, working with customer service to launch the arrearage management pilot within the next couple of weeks. We're also coordinating our utility assistance from the emergency rental federal package with Snohomish County, several stakeholders, but we are working with the county's partners to establish the process and are hoping to see these funds begin to reach our eligible customers in late May or early June. And we'll be sharing more of those details with the commission as soon as the process gets developed. And also to note on a customer service, again, a year-to-date service level is at 92%. So just phenomenal performance from our customer and energy service group.
Unbelievable.
Our generation and power rates and transmission group, the district generation and substation completed a successful and accident-free one-week shutdown of our Jackson Hydro project in late March. During the shutdown, the substation staff completed the completed the replacement of the 125 DC battery system and chargers, upgrading it from a 490 amp hour to now 670 amp hour, and a huge credit to the load calculations of our substation engineers. Generation staff was also quite busy completing rebuilds and cleaning of the powerhouse cooling water system, upgrading operational technology architecture, and replacing the vital equipment. Overall, it was a very, very successful shutdown executed by the entire crew. Power Supply executed a renewable energy credit transaction that brought in approximately $1.1 million in revenue from the sale of surplus RECs. The effort leveraged a new regulatory compliance approach to the renewable portfolio standard that allowed PUD to pivot from being a REC buyer to a REC seller in 2021. Additionally, the team increased the value of our RECs by certifying them through a no-cost REC program. This creative approach added an additional $300,000 in value. In our HR group, the senior HR business partners are participating in a new manager orientation. This is a quarterly meeting with an opportunity for new managers and HR staff to share information about the HR services and to start building relationships in the spirit of Team PUD. Also in HR, the recruiting team is excited to kick off the district's summer student program. Unfortunately, due to COVID last year, we weren't able to offer this program. However, this year, managers have found creative ways for students to work in the field or at home, respecting the safety measures required for COVID, but also providing opportunities for students to learn more about employment at the district and to work on interesting projects. Out of our finance group, we have the official FEMA declaration for the January 2021 storm. The district will need to appoint an authorized rep to coordinate this activity. Our risk management group, Jim Herling, will specifically as our normal appointee, and we'll be bringing a resolution to the May 4th meeting to take care of this as the next step. Also out of finance, we're in negotiations with our insurance carriers, and this is just a heads up. The renewals are coming in June. We continue to see some upward pressure on insurance premiums, and we will have a status update for you at the May 4th meeting with resolutions to follow. And there's more to come on this, but for now, just be aware that there is a sign of premium increases, and we are in negotiations right now. DEI update, after receiving 72 applications to participate on the DEI committee, 15 staff members were selected to participate, and an announcement will be made in tomorrow's district daily. And then lastly, the governor's visit to the microgrid went extremely well. He was very engaged, asked great questions, and seemed genuinely enthusiastic about the project and all the work that Snohomish has been doing around clean energy and the utility of the future. And quite frankly, I don't really think he wanted to go, but I know his staff kind of kept ushering him that they had to get out of here. And but he really did seem genuinely excited and enthused with the project. And his last parting words were, you need to be really proud. He said, don't be humble about this, brag about it. This is a really great, great project. So, and that's it.
He hasn't met Julie, has he? She will brag. We will brag. It's a great project. Yep. I'm glad he came up.
Any questions?
Just a comment to what John was saying, that Governor Inslee has always been a strong supporter of Snohomish and our programs. And actually, I'm trying to recall which grant it was. But, you know, it was the relationships and the admiration, I think, that he has for what Snohomish does, the talent that we have, that I think he was directly responsible for one of the grants we got. So, you know what? He may not have wanted to be there today, but it sounds like he enjoyed it. He learned something. And those kinds of contacts that we make on a routine basis, you know, sometimes we can get in the front of the line to get some money.
Well, he made a specific comment that we were had been one of the first utilities to be the most progressive and with clean energy projects, and he was thrilled that we were still just as engaged in those today. So he hadn't forgotten us.
People who don't pay much attention to government may not realize it, but the agencies are under the governor. So the Department of Ecology, the DNR, all those agencies, he can make a lot of difference for us in those agencies, and he does. I mean, I remember when we had to really push him hard to try to get ecology to make stronger carbon requirements for our state. It wasn't, I mean, he didn't just say, okay, because, you know, it's stepping into ecology, into the Department of Ecology, but he has been very supportive ever since of all the clean energy, clean efficiency and all of that. So I agree with Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, and we really stressed our gratitude to him and the state and Commerce for the financial help and with all these projects, and you know, that it really does help us move forward to build and test the innovative technologies that are needed to meet the clean energy demands of the future. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're going to keep knocking on that door.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, next we have item 6, commission business. 6A, commission reports. That are reports, commissioners?
I have no reports.
I have none. I was waiting to hear how the tour went, but I've heard from you and John already, Sid, so.
It went well. He's a clean tech nerd, and
he really
enjoyed it, and so he engaged with all the employees there, and he was very impressed. Asked really great questions too.
What were some of his questions, if I may ask?
He wanted to know a detailed question: how we tested the load. So they recently tested putting a high load on the system and then abruptly disconnecting the power to see if everything is switched over. And so he asked a couple of questions about that. I mean, he asked how the panels for that hold up the solar array, where they're set in concrete, and they were driven 6 feet into the ground with a machine. So it was just, we got into the weeds a little bit, but he's very interested in it all. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next is item 6B, Commissioner event calendar. Are there any changes to the commissioner event calendar, commissioners?
I don't have any for me.
Now we have NWPPA coming up next month. Is that correct? I see we do. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking to myself.
Next, we have item C, our 2021 budget forecast and major project status report, the first quarter results. Great report. Any questions from the commissioner regarding the report? We're at the very back of our packet.
Yeah. Just a minute. Let's see. Hold on. Time out.
Starts on page 231 of the packet.
Right. Yeah.
Great report. I just continue to be surprised, and I don't need any feedback on this, that given the year that we had, that our revenues are still very respectable. They're going to come in close to what was budgeted.
Mm-hmm.
That surprises me. I mean, that's great work on in terms of staff working the accounts. But that continues to surprise me, and I guess it's due to good work on our staff's part.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, next is item 7, our governance planning calendar. Are there any changes to the governance planning calendar, commissioners?
Just a minute. Hold on. Let's see. So let me just say that sometime in July, we need to review our policies. And so I'm hoping we could get that scheduled. And actually, it might be a good fit with our July 6th meeting, our board owner linkage plan. I don't know. Maybe that's separate. What do you think?
Commissioner Wolf, can I just confirm where the July date, what July date you're looking at for the policy?
July 6th.
But you said that it was already set for July?
No, we haven't set a date for reviewing our board policies. And the linkage plan is really part of that, but it's a big overlooked, neglected part. So we need to develop our linkage plan.
Right, but I think also, he's asking, is that you're saying that we have to review our policies every 2 years? And I think she's asking where that's coming from.
Well, that would be, that's a requirement in our policies that they have to be reviewed every 2 years at a minimum. And so we've had COVID to deal with for over a year. And so July would be the time that we would, we'd be expected to do a review of our policies sometime in July.
Which policy is that? Because I know we approved them in November of 19.
That's right. Well, let's see. Somewhere in the policy book that I have, there was a note that July of 2021 would be the time that we would review them. But you know, if you think that's too early, we could move it, you know, further back. But
it's not too early. It's just I think we're all waiting to when we can meet in person. I think yeah. I would love to have the three of us in a room with our with all our staff that can help us and to go through our policies and make sure what's working is working and what's not working, you know, and to go through them all in good detail.
Yeah, I hope that, I mean, I hope that everyone else has, as I have had my two shots plus a month. And if we've all had our two shots and are willing to wear a mask, I don't see what's wrong with meeting in person. We might not have to wear a mask if we've all had our two shots. And if we keep, you know, well, we are usually distanced at our meetings anyway. We could do the physical distancing very easily. And maybe even meet outdoors. I would love that.
Yeah, I think right now we can't meet in person via the governor's.
Right, until the end of June. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the end of June. I don't think there's a date on it. Allison, you know more than that about that.
As far as I'm aware, there's no current end date. It's ongoing, the proclamation, until the pandemic ends or it's stated otherwise, is my understanding.
Oh, really?
Huh. So I guess my thought, I've been in a lot of thinking about this, and I've had some conversations too with Melissa and Allison, but I guess my thought is, first, I'd like for the PUD staff to be able to be back at work in a normal way. And then, of course, the governor's proclamation has to be lifted. And then I think it would be appropriate for us to get together in like we have in the past in person. So I look forward to those days.
As Commissioner Olson, my silence should not be interpreted as agreeing, but I would like to have more discussion in terms of when it's appropriate. I agree with doing it in person. It's much better. But I would like to go into something like this with a better structure in terms of what we want to accomplish. Just a blanket update our policies doesn't get there for me. I don't think it's productive for us to do that. Won't go into any more of it now because this kind of came on me at the last minute, but I would like the board to have further conversation, not just let's have a workshop to work on policies. That doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay.
Well, maybe before the next meeting, or I'll send it to Allison, I'll send you the wording that says that we should be doing a kind of routine update, not updates, but reviewing. Maybe we wouldn't change anything, but at least we should review it. And it's very, very important to develop this linkage plan. And I think that this is for the board primarily to deal with ideas for how we can better connect with our public. I think that's what's implied with the word owner. So board owner, board pay, customer linkage plan. How can we better connect with our customers as board members?
Right. I'm looking forward to that. that meeting.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Okay, anything else about our governance planning calendar?
I have nothing.
Okay.
That's it for me. Thank you.
Is there any further business to come before the board today?
I have no further business.
Okay. Hearing none, it is 3 p.m. and our meeting is now adjourned. Enjoy our beautiful weather, everyone.